so easy to take your eye off the ball and just stop asking, what do our customers want? What do they want? In my case, what do players and operators want? What do they actually want? Not what do I want to sell them? What do they care about? Do they want higher RTP or lower? Do they want faster? Do they want more interesting? Do they want more bonuses or less bonuses? You know, do operators want more tools that are easier to use or not?
This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Solutions, the leading iGaming PAM platform with a modular approach, including many benefits like a fast, secure, and scalable API-based platform integrated with all major third-party products and services. Make sure you head over to Pragmatic Solutions and join our smart thinking.
This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Play, a leading game developer providing player favorites to the most successful brands across the industry. With an award-winning multi-product portfolio of slots, live casino, bingo, virtual sports, and more, Pragmatic Play is powering up new possibilities of play through one single API. Visit pragmaticplay.com and discover your favorite every time.
I suppose we can say welcome to the Toddcast today for episode number 5. It's been a long time coming, Todd.
It's been a while.
The last one was episode 100. It was 70-something long episodes ago. The fans have been screaming for a follow-up. They have been asking, what's happening? What's the relationship between Todd and Pierre? Is it broken? What's happened here? But here we are back. How's
it
been going, my friend?
In your new studio. It's amazing. Yes, it's spectacular. I love it. Yes. So it's really good to be back. You know, I come and I talk to you, but otherwise I live in the laboratory. You know, I like getting out and talking games and talking product and all that sort of stuff. But most of the time I spent my time with mathematicians and game designers and all that sort of stuff. So it's nice to come out of hibernation and have a nice conversation with you.
It's fantastic to have you back here, Todd, for sure. And I wanted to, you know, previous episodes we've you know, we talked about this time we want to do a bit of a deep dive into Evolution itself and to understand the company from a past, present and future perspective a bit better and focus more on what is the future of Evolution. Previous episodes we have been kind of talking a little bit more from a visionary point of view and bouncing ideas back and forth, but I want to kind of do a bit more of a deep dive into Evolution itself today to understand the company as best that we can, essentially. So maybe just as a starting point, Todd, I mean, we are going in now to 2024. 2023 was another strong year for Evolution. Increased revenues on all fronts, record EBITDA results. You are probably the only company that I know of that publishes all-time high EBITDA and revenue and all top-line numbers every single report without ever mentioning the word all-time high. But I want to maybe pass the ball over to you and talk a little bit more about 2023 in review. How was the year for you guys? What were the ups? What were the downs?
Yeah, I see everything through the product lens, as you'd imagine. And so it was a great year. It was a spectacular year. Great games. Roadmap was super strong. It was a big year for efficiency gains. We started the year over on the NetEnt side. Coming out of the prior year, I think we got out like 9 games or some really low number. And, you know, we start this year with running at a pace of like 24 games or something like this. So super efficiency, we're making richer, better games. A number of strides have been made, putting in the hard, hard yards on OSS. That's a massive project. That's our one-stop shop. Yeah. So basically what it is it's getting all the different slot companies, Red Tiger, No Limit City, NetEnt, Big Time Gaming at Evolution, and everything all onto this one channel. And then on top of that, you build a singular suite of like bonusing tools and all these ways to help operators and everything to make their life really as easy as possible, but also to increase the distribution. So NetEnt and Evolution have a lot more clients than, say, No Limit City. But you got to get all your clients over onto it first. And so we've been putting in those hard yards. And then you get a client to come over. Maybe you have a direct integration and they move over. Well, your players used to be able to click on their recently played games. Well, now it doesn't appear because that game has a different game code on the back end. And it's a little bit in the weeds, but the point is the transitioning to a new platform, even if it's as good as OSS, you still you have to take a bit of a hit to do so. So we've taken a lot of those hits. So, and that's all behind the scenes. So I'm really, really happy that like a lot of that has been taken now. And so Funky Time is right out of the gate, Super Smash, a bunch of other things, big hits, really excited. Uh-huh. So we ended the year like strong.
So I think it's interesting perhaps to zoom in on the one-stop shop a little bit, because it's not something that we see that much communication around. So essentially what you're saying is you obviously have acquired X amount of game studios in the last couple of years, and Evolution is working with something like 800 operators or something like that, individual customers. But it doesn't mean that all of those 800 customers offer all of your products. Some of them might only offer the live offering, for example, and others might only offer a couple of the game suppliers. And through the one-stop shop, you essentially want to offer the operators one integration where they get access to all the Evolution products. So in the long run, what you're looking for is all these 800 operators, it would be the ambitious goal to be integrated with all of your products. And perhaps, you know, if there are future acquisitions, it would be an automatic and easy integration right from the starting line without having to kind of negotiate with all these 800 operators. Something along those lines, right? But you're saying in order to get to that point, you also have to take one step back. You need to integrate.
You've got to go to your partners who might have NetEnt from this channel and Evolution from this channel and No Limit City from this channel and Big Time from this channel. So they've already, so a client may have all those games already, or maybe they have all of them except one brand. Mm-hmm. And now you've got to go to them and say, hey, I want you to shift everything over to One Stop Shop. And it's a big project. And so, you know, there can be some resistance or it takes time. So now though, we've got so many tools that we've built on top of a one-stop shop. So the benefits for clients moving over is so vast that we've basically been moving a lot of clients over. And so once you've done it, it's like you said, you could have these wonderful conversations with a client where you say, by the way, you don't know it, but you've already got No Limit City integrated. Would you like us to turn it on? Yeah. And then you just have to think, do you want to turn all the games on at once, or do you turn them on 10 at a time, or you need a rollout strategy? But it's really nice. And yeah, there's a lot of clients that don't have all of the brands.
Right. So this is perhaps some interesting kind of steps forward that we'll see in 2024, where you get more and more customers onboarded to the one-stop shop. I don't know if you can talk about how far in that process you are in the integration
together. Moving along. I don't even know the numbers. Yeah. You know, I live on the product side. So my contribution to the process is creating new tools, of which there are many coming, and saying like, what do operators want out of one-stop shop? And so I'll kind of create these sorts of things, and I'll hear numbers like about, you know, are we ready for a tool like this? When will we be ready? And you want to be over halfway and all this sort of stuff. So I don't know the exact numbers.
Okay, fair enough. So if we were to look at maybe a part of the performance of 2023 that perhaps did not exceed the targets, it would maybe be zooming in on the RNG side of the business. Live has always performed incredibly well with Evo, but Evolution has an outspoken target to grow the RNG product by double digits, I believe, something like that, on a year-to-year basis. So can you talk a little bit of what has held the RNG product back from reaching that target so far, and what do you believe is going to be kind of the next steps in order to catch up to that target? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, talking about the future is always my favorite subject.
Right.
We've taken the difficult part, as I said, you know, transitioning over, you may lose players in a transition because they used to be able to click on, you break all the algorithms. You know, clients have like recommended games and they've recently played. And so when you bring them over to a new platform, you lose some of that. And so players have to search for it again, and you try to mitigate it. And we've gotten better at it. But we've not really enjoyed the great benefits of it. We've enjoyed some of the benefits. I don't want to overstate it. But then we say, like, well, what are you going to do to grow it going forward? There's so much stuff now. And it's all sort of made possible by one-stop shop. So now that everything is on one platform, when you're playing Crazy Time, you'll be able to click a button and a little side panel will slide out. You'll be able to play a slot at the same time as you're playing Crazy Time. And so we can do that now with other live games. So you can play Crazy Time and like Monopoly Live at the same time, but you can't do it with slots. And so now you'll be able to do that. So that's powerful. We're going to make it so we've gotten quite good with artificial intelligence and game recommendations and all that sort of stuff. And so we're going to apply that to, we've been applying it to all the games on one-stop shop. And we're going to offer that to our partners so that they can leverage millions and millions of dollars worth of AI homework and an amazing data set to them so that they can help their players find games that they might not know that they'll enjoy, but they will enjoy. Operators want more. Making good games isn't enough. And so we're doing something called Spin Gifts. Again, only available on OSS, but this is an Evolution-funded program where when players are playing our slots, it'll randomly pop up and say, congratulations, you win Spin Gifts. A wheel will be, and you spin it, and maybe you'll win 5 or 10 or 20 spins at the same value as your last spin. So if you bet $50 on your last spin, you're going to win maybe 20 spins at $50. It's a $1,000 value. Evolution pays that. And so so these kinds of things operators love. And so we're doing a lot of this stuff. None of those things I mentioned have rolled out yet, but they're all coming here in the first half of this year. So that's all really powerful. Also, we're working to combine live and slots in all kinds of different ways. We've done it a few different ways with like crazy coin flip and things like that. But combining live and slots in the world of streaming, I think that's an interesting opportunity that we can talk about. So, and of course, good old fashioned focus on trying to make the best possible games you can and things like that. So more features. Unlimited City has action spins now. They've rolled out God mode, all kinds of stuff like that. We'll bring Red Tiger tournaments, Red Tiger jackpots over to NetEnt and over to other games on One Stop Shop. So kind of best of all worlds.
How much do you rely on kind of the old school, most popular titles from back in the day, like the Starbirds, for example, and those kind of classical titles? How much do they, without maybe going into too much detail, but how much do they kind of carry the performance on the RNG side?
A lot.
And how important is it to create this next generation of hit versus just kind of pumping out as many games as you can?
Yeah, the Starbursts, they're almost like, it's almost like blackjack nowadays.
Right.
It's wonderful to have one of those. It's a bonanza, extra chili, mental, fire in the hole, these kinds of games. Yeah, they're almost their own categories, and they withstand the test of time in a very special way. And we're all trying to make hits. That is not unique to us, I assure you. But it's harder than ever to have something resonate just because the flow of games is so great. You know, there's thousands of new games. And so a lot of those games I just mentioned, those brands were built in an era where you spent a lot more time at the top of a website and you just didn't have the flow through. You didn't have 2 days to try to catch as many people as you can. And in 2 days, you can only have maybe, 15% of the, 1/15 of the playing population come through in a couple of days, right? So, they're wonderful to have. And boy, oh boy, it's sure nice to be able to do sequels. And so it's great.
Yeah, exactly. So does that mean like, you know, the sequels are becoming more popular? I can tell as well now, both from yourself and other providers as well. It seems like kind of creating those kind of titles that can stand the test of time and then produce more upcoming games using the same IP seems to be a more and more kind of proven and tested strategy.
Yeah, I mean, Hollywood figured it out, and right. So have game makers. Yeah, if you're lucky enough to have a brand that resonated, doing a V2 makes a lot of sense. And and why wouldn't you, right? I mean, it's almost formulaic that you try to do your best to stay true to the original and delight players. But yeah. It's a very natural thing.
Yeah, for sure. And if you look at the kind of roadmap that you have ahead of yourself now in 2024, it is nearly impossible to predict which games are going to kind of make it through that needle eye. But can you talk a little bit more about the games that you are most excited for, perhaps, for 2024?
Yeah. I think we showed this game a couple weeks ago. We unveiled it, called Lightning Storm. I think it's the literal best work we've ever done as a company. And I'm so proud of it. It's the original team that built Dreamcatcher 2, by the way, which is a fun fact, the world's first game show. And it's basically the same group of us. There's more people now, the games are more complex and all that sort of stuff. But there's a core group of us that worked on Dreamcatcher as well, and Monopoly and Funky Time and Crazy Time and all that. But it's just a spectacular game. I think it's not a competition between the games, but it could give Crazy Time a run for its money. And, you know, I'm usually not one to like talk that way. I think it's so incredibly fun. It's so perfect for this moment in time. It appeals to the shorter attention spans. You can win big. It's got more of everything. There's no reason not to play it. So I'm super excited about that one. And the game shows are really important because that's how people learn about Live. And so they come in to play the game shows, and then they go on to play maybe Roulette, Blackjack, Baccarat, and, you know, those core games that they know. Or it pulls slot players over. And as I told you, now they're going to come over to play that, and they can play slots at the same time, which is fun. So that's what I'm most excited about. Then in terms of like headline, big time flagship games, the tools that we're bringing to OSS, like, I know it sounds boring, but that's what operators want. It's not enough to make good games anymore. It's that's 2018 stuff. You need to have a set of tools that are easy to take, that oftentimes are funded by the supplier, if it's a bonusing thing, and you need to cater to operators. We have something called Evo Dream Creator, that anytime an operator says, will you make us a bespoke game? Yes, sure. And it's a machine that makes the machines. And they can get in there and they can kind of design it this way and that way. And one designer can bang out a game in a few days. So that kind of stuff gets me pretty, pretty excited.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Tools, I know. Sounds boring for a product guy, but and combining Live and slots is still, I'm very excited about that.
Right. And obviously, it hasn't escaped anyone that the use of AI and game creation is becoming more and more prevalent now. And I know that you had mentioned this in a previous report. I think maybe it was Martin who mentioned it in his CEO words or something like that, that some of the games are now on the RNG side are now predominantly made by the use of AI tools. Can you talk a little bit more about how Evolution view the use of AI in creating games, and where do you think this is heading?
You just write into a prompt, make me a great new game, and it boom, comes out the other end. It's fantastic. we do use. I encourage everybody to embrace UI, or I'm sorry, AI, on the design side, especially. That's where we're seeing it, and it's good for idea generation basically idea generation, a lot of that sort of stuff. It's really good for quick art generation, and you can iterate more easily with it. So we like it for those reasons. We've been using it for a while in like our lobby and game recommendation engines and risk and fraud and stuff like that. So that's not new to us. But on the development side, we're not using it all in math. Original idea generation, nothing. concept generation, nothing, feature generation, nothing, graphics, art, game naming, it's helpful there. So it's early days, but it's a nice tool.
Yeah. On the R&D side, so I know that there are several game providers that are creating a lot of the kind of design work through tools like Midjourney, for example, that can generate really beautiful art, and you can create a storyline through ChatGPT and then translate that over to Midjourney to essentially create what the game is going to be about and how it will look, essentially. And other AI tools that can also produce the audio. So there is kind of a suite of tools, a suite of AI tools done that can essentially create a full game these days. So my question is, we are only a year into the use of these type of tools, and so you would imagine that this exponential curve that we are on will only continue to the point where AI graphic designers and the other AI tools will become so good that they outcompete humans, essentially. But when we get to that point, doesn't that also mean that we live in a world of infinite games? And how do you stand out in a world like that, do you think? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll just kind of finish off on this point as well, because it's not unique to you as a game supplier. We run our online news portal, for example. And the same is also true for content generation on the internet when it comes to writing articles, that the AI can produce an infinite amount of content on the internet. And so we also faced with this question, how do we stand out in a world of infinite content? How do you think about this question? Mm-hmm. Big existential one.
Yeah, you're right. It's going to be easier and easier to do everything in tech. One person will be able to do the work of many, and writing code and doing design and all sorts of stuff. And it's going to be great. Brands will be more powerful than ever in your world and in our world. So it's good to have Starburst. It's good to have Gonzo. It's good to have Extra Chili. And then it's good to have a brand as a company that people kind of know and trust. And so if you have a lot, if it's easier to make games, then I suppose there'll be more games. And then that'll make it probably harder on smaller suppliers too, because the costs to get the games certified and all that sort of stuff will still be the same, and you got to go through every jurisdiction, and you got to get the distribution will matter more as it gets increasingly crowded. Tools around the games, back to that subject, become increasingly more powerful, and so operators will probably ask, if I'm going to launch your game, does it come with, in our case, spin gifts or something like that? So it's going to be the ecosystem around the games. And yeah, I think brands will be more powerful than ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you. I think, translate it over to our world, and I think it's might be applicable to you as well. We view the trade news media world within our industry segmented by tier one, tier two, and tier three news portals. And you have kind of the tier ones are the ones that are kind of a great editorial team that is going out there to chase news, to chase original content. So they produce the original content that then kind of sifters down to tier two. So the tier two portals would still write with a pretty high degree of, it's really high level of writing skills, and they'll be able to repurpose the most important articles, let's say. And then when we move down to tier three news portals, those are the ones that are mostly repurposing PRs, essentially. Just get content out there without having to think, really. They don't really need an editorial team, and they can just kind of pump out content. And with the introduction of AI, it's quite easy to see how there will be no more tier three news portals, because with the use of AI, they can repurpose content in article form that will look pretty good. So they'll automatically go from tier three to tier two. Tier twos will kind of do the same thing. They'll also repurpose a lot of the content that is being published on the internet in order to increase their content output. So kind of tier three and tier two will merge together. But then I think where the interesting thing happens is in the tier one segment, where today we have, let's say, 5 or 6 news portals in the industry that are considered tier one, that are really ambitious, that are really trying to do the best they can. And I think it is easy to go down a bit of a lazy route as a tier one and say, now we're going to kind of lean on AI to generate more and more of our content. And slowly but surely, you can decrease your operational expenses by doing so, and you morph into one of the other tier twos. And it will become more difficult to say, we're actually going to resist this kind of lazy pursuit of increasing content output in order to remain a tier one and actually do the gritty hard work that it takes to produce original content. So I think what's going to happen is there's going to be no more tier three. There's only going to be tier two, and there's going to be less of the tier ones. But the tier ones that are there will be so strong as brands that they will be the ones who are winning at the end of the day. So you have like a couple of tier ones and then a huge amount of tier two content providers. Maybe it's true for game providers as well.
I think it's a very astute analysis of your space. And when they make those moves and they get lazy and they let the AI do the work, they will all pat themselves on the back for the first quarter or two.
Right.
And they will say, wow, well done. We haven't lost a single user. And we've cut our costs. I always like to use the example. I talk a lot about making honest games that players love, and it means hundreds of different things to make an honest game. And I always say, like, in the end, people figure it out. Right. You know, if you have a casino, and let's say you have a movie theater, and you say, I've got an idea. Friday night, we're always at capacity. I'm going to raise the prices to 50 euros a ticket. So what's going to happen is someone's going to go there with their date and they're all excited. Date night, Friday, they agree they're going to go to movies. Goes to the counter, 2 tickets to see the new movie. I say, okay, that's going to be 100 euros for 2 tickets. And you're going to act all cool like nothing happened, right? Like, because you got to have your date. And tonight they'll get away with it. And I pick an egregious example using 50, but maybe 20 euros or something. And what's going to happen is they're going to say, well, what happened to our ticket sales? Well, they surged. Well, what happened to the number of people that came through the theater? Well, it stayed the same. Well, I knew we could do it. But what happens is next time they go to see a movie, they're going to go bowling instead, or they'll go see a comedy show or something. And so people sniff it out in the long run. You know, if you're making frozen pizzas and you take a little bit of cheese off and a little bit of pepperoni off to juice your profits, in the long run, you just have a lesser product. And right. Product always, always wins.
Right. And it's not to say that the use of AI is automatically going to kind of decrease the quality of your work, but it's more to say that, like, don't lose the eye of the ball as you are kind of experimenting with the use of AI. Like, don't go down this lazy route where, okay, you see this as an opportunity to save money, to save operational expenses. Like, that's not what AI should be. The AI should be there to kind of continue to invest the amount of money that you are investing, or increase the spend, and then add the use of AI on top of that as well. And that's where the magic happens, I think. But I think most people are not seeing that far.
It's so easy to take your eye off the ball and just stop asking, what do our customers want? What do they want? In my case, what do players and operators want? What do they actually want? Not what do I want to sell them. What do they care about? Do they want higher RTP or lower? Do they want faster? Do they want more interesting? Do they want more bonuses or less bonuses? You know, do operators want more tools that are easier to use or not? You know, if news breaks, do you want to go to the only source that might have actual quotes from the people that were involved in the story? I think you probably do. But that's effort. That's work. That's relationship maintenance. That's, you know, but I know when news breaks, if it's in the industry, I go straight to you guys. Straight to you guys. I skip not CNBC or anything like someone buzzing about it. I'm like, oh, I want to know what the story is. And I know I'm going to get the facts cleanly written.
But what a hype man you are, Todd. I like it. If you ever look for
I'm a fan.
If you're ever looking for a job, Todd, as a hype person,
I'll keep that in mind.
I'll keep the door open.
All right, thanks.
So from one topic to the other, I want to also zoom in a little bit on the North American side of your business as well. So Evolution very early on enjoyed a monopoly more or less in the US. You were very early on to be able to access the market in the States where online casino is legal, of course. And I want to ask a little bit, as we now move forward, the North American market seems to have settled somewhat. There isn't really that much movement right now into legalizing further states. The operators have kind of, the dust has settled somewhat, although we have some new entries, and I saw that Evolution signed with BetFanatics the other day, so congratulations to that, of course. There is a new customer there for sure. But how do you view the kind of future growth in the North American market, considering that you work with most of the operators that are relevant in the market? There isn't that many states that are looking to legalize online gambling, at least not in the short or medium term. But how do you plan to grow that market?
Mm-hmm. When I think about growing it, I think about the product being relatively immature and new. So people just, they don't know live casino, and they're seeing it so often for the first time. And we haven't cultivated a generation of game show players yet. And so we just went live with I vision growing it by getting more and better product into the markets. And it's hard there because it's a much harder place to do business than anywhere else, because every time you want to set up shop, you got to go into a new state and you got to change. Like, every state has different blackjack rules and you have to comply. So you have to adjust your code again and again and again. And you have to have a studio in every state, and you have to have sort of everything in every state, and it's expensive. And so you kind of have to have scale just to get to, you know, it's very, very, very difficult market for a bunch of reasons. So, but in the product, if you compare like what you would log in Malta and see versus what somebody would log in Michigan and see, is quite different. You know, you're immediately asking, where's my Monopoly? Where's my Funky Time? Where's my Crazy Time? You know, these are some of our biggest brands. Now, we've got some stuff out there, Lightning Roulette and all that, but there's just going to be an adoption journey. And if you look at something like New Jersey, live adoption is greater than it is in other states. And it's a more mature market. We've got better product there. So just staying the course, trying to make sure dealers smile at players, make sure that we get the cards out without mistakes, that we have a nice variety of games in the lobby. You know, the normal standard stuff. It's just a way harder and more expensive place to do the normal stuff.
Right. And so do you foresee that by time you will kind of increase the amount of games that you offer in the various states? So, for example, you built the Crazy Time.
Yeah, Crazy Time in New Jersey. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
it went live. So that's the first.
Going step. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you foresee kind of building future studios in the various states?
Absolutely. Yeah. We definitely want to have the much, we want to bring game shows. We want to bring derivations of our games. We've got Lightning Baccarat and different variations on Baccarat. We've got different variations on Blackjack. Our 2024 roadmap reflects an exciting market in the US. It's very Blackjack centric. So we've got a bunch of Blackjack innovations coming to the market. We'll roll them out worldwide, but I'm looking at America.
Yeah.
when those things hit the roadmap. Like craps, we would have never done craps if it wasn't for the United States. So that's just it's a sure thing. We'll continue to bring, but regulators have never seen some of these games before, so you got to work with them, and you got to go into each state and teach our own staff how to manage and run these games, and that's a tricky effort as well. So it's a process,
right? And you know, the question that you probably got a million times, Todd, why is it so difficult for your competitors to establish themselves? I mean, like I said, in the US, you've enjoyed a near monopoly. And I know right now there are a couple of others that are entering the market now, finally, a couple of years later. So there is an element of competition that is happening now in the North American side of the business. But still, there isn't you know, since we did our podcast, our first podcast, almost 4 years ago, we talked about the same thing, you know, what could disrupt evolution at that time? Like who is the kind of player who's going to finally kind of go toe-to-toe with evolution at some point? And from then till now, you are still enjoying that that kind of leap between you and everyone else. Why is it so difficult for competitors to go toe-to-toe with evolution?
Yeah, it was easier. It was easier to disrupt evolution 4 years ago than today, because to show up and have a competitive live product in 2025, let's say, or 2024, the cost is so high. It's extremely expensive, and just to have a sufficient live offering. And most people don't want to take those costs. But then you do it, and you know, you mentioned there's a couple of other companies in America that are doing live, no big deal. We're up against 40-ish live providers in the rest of the world. It's kind of a weird dynamic, and I don't think that's by accident. I think they look at the economics of the market, and it's a tough road ahead. And so even if you build a good live offering, it's a little bit maybe like if you build a really great soda. If you and I come up with some fantastic cola that does great in blind taste tests, now you got to get the distribution and go get shelf space. Coca-Cola is not going to give that away. Even if we can get shelf space, why are customers going to pull it off the shelf? They like Coca-Cola already. And so we've got a couple of Coca-Colas. You know, we've got Crazy Time and the Lightning franchise, and Evolution itself is a brand. And people have played a lot of rounds, and they trust it. They trust the company. Maybe you had a day where you had a 500x win on Lightning Roulette, or you had a big win on some other game. Well, that makes you trust the blackjack at Evolution more. In the same way, you don't want to switch from Coca-Cola to something else, or you don't want to switch banks. Like, people just don't like change. You don't like it when your email interface changes. and then you got to fight against the other 39, right? Forget about competing against Evolution. Like, that's a different story. You got to go and compete against the other 39 that are fighting to be great. And a lot of them are great. And so it's tough. And then in the States, you got to do it all in New Jersey, then again in Michigan, and then again in Pennsylvania. And, you know, evolution can justify, let's say there's a bug on an iPhone 6 or an iPhone 5, or there's a bug with a Yandex browser, or there's a bug on a Galaxy folding phone. And it might be a small piece of the business. So most providers would just never fix it. But if you're a big scale operator, or provider rather, of course you will fix everything. And so all of that adds up to like maybe the bottom 12% of devices and browsers. And so it just works better. And then you've got to combine three businesses, which is really hard. The software business is hard enough, right? We're a software provider, and that's what you click on your screens and all that. And that's got to be great, and we got to have great video, and it's got to work, and it's got to work on different browsers, on different devices, all that. But then, in our case, we have to run this 20,000 some person operation. So it's a casino. You got to run a casino. Caesars, MGM, Sands, they can tell you how hard that business is. And that's really hard. And then everything's happening on camera, so there's mistakes and stuff like that. And you got to have mistake resolution systems. And then you've got card counters, right? All the normal stuff that comes with running a casino. You got people who have written software to predict where the roulette ball is going to fall. You got DDoS attacks, all that. Okay. And then you have a hardware piece of the business, right? So at Evolution, we've got our own hardware. We have a machine shop where we're milling our own stuff to build the game shows. We bought DigiWheel, giant spinning digital wheel. In equipment support and all that sort of stuff, all the cameras, getting it all to work together, and it breaks all the time. And so you've got to do all that to support everything. You have to have training academies. You have to have a system. And then after that, you have to have good ideas for the next breed of games. And even if you get it all right, why again? Why do the players want to come over? Why do they want to switch? What are you offering them?
Right.
You can't take the zeros off of the roulette wheel to compete on price, because operators won't allow it. Would you take a roulette with a zero house edge if you were an operator? No. So they can't compete on house edge. They don't have brands. The know-how is very, very difficult. It's a terribly difficult business. Take on Coca-Cola. It's easier.
So, okay, but if we would play with a thought experiment here and say, you know, BlackRock comes to Todd and they tell Todd, okay, we give you $1 billion to start your live casino provider from scratch. And now we want you to compete against Evolution. And what plan, what business plan would you come up with to have a chance to disrupt Evolution if you had BlackRock behind you?
Yeah, first of all, like, I wouldn't want the job because it's going to be soulless. I got to go back to making a roulette and a blackjack game. Right. And there's a ton about the live business that I don't know. There's so much that I don't know. And it's all like institutional knowledge that exists in every little corner of Evolution. And we have people that are world-class expert on the card scanners and, you know, and all these little things that I would have to sort of think about from scratch. And so it would take years. So first of all, I don't want the job, because of that. But then you're not going to be, it's going to be super hard to be successful, even with, we'll call it unlimited money. Because at the end of the day, say you snap your fingers and you just get to have this fully functional live operation, and you have to overpay everybody because, you know, you gotta try to get people that have know-how and they probably already have jobs. So you gotta get people to come over. Again, why are the players gonna switch? Why does some player in New Jersey that plays blackjack with Evolution, like, why are they gonna come over? So, I mean, what you do is you try to do all the same things Evolution has done. You try to make great game shows. You have best of class everything. You'd have it totally over-engineered for your size. What's justifiable for Evolution, you'd be doing as a small company. You'd try to hire and retain great staff. You'd put systems in place where everybody's motivated to deal with a smile, mistake-free, and with speed. And then you try to like optimize each of those things perfectly. And then you'd show up and you'd probably discount your product because otherwise, why is anybody going to take it? So you'd discount it to operators. Meanwhile, you have the insane OPEX expense and CAPEX. Studios are expensive to build. So you'd come in and you'd say, you know, we're going to offer it to you for a couple points cheaper, which is probably what a lot of companies do. And then your last barrier you got to get over is the players. So maybe you try to buy positioning. Players are going to come in and say, where's my crazy time? Why did you move it? What's going on? Yeah. What is this? Back.
Yeah. And so when someone like The Sounds, the biggest casino organizer in the entire world, when they launch a live casino as they did a year ago, it doesn't frighten you?
No, I mean, they'll be like the 41st live provider.
Right.
You know, what's interesting about Sands is that they have effectively the unlimited money that you spoke of. But Evolution could probably go to Las Vegas and build a casino if it wanted to as well. And I don't think Sands would get too concerned about us buying a piece of land and erecting a casino on it. I think they would say, go ahead, guys. Or I guess in Sands' case, if we went to Macau or Singapore, I don't think they would be that concerned about us entering the market. They're very, very different businesses.
Yeah. It's starting from scratch. Yeah. It's not that the Sands have any competitive edge such, because they are the biggest in the land-based side, for example.
Right.
They have to start from scratch.
The overlap is very, very little. It's like they have dealers who deal cards, and so that operational piece of it, they would probably be quite good at. It's a very different kind of a running a casino, running an online studio-based casino. Certainly solvable. But no, I don't think they're gonna like being in the business very much.
Right. So when we talked about this 4 years ago, we said, you know, it's difficult to find a case for Evolution being disrupted, and you ended with saying, you know, the famous last words. But here we are 4 years later, and the position seems to be strengthened, and there isn't really a clear case in your mind to disrupt the business still.
Well, if you look at the things that we've done, those are the things that I would have done to disrupt evolution. I would have bought DigiWheel and tried to make some amazing game shows around it. You know, I would have. We've always just been very game focused. That's always been our DNA, and now we're getting very focused on operator tools, bonusing suites, this spin gifts that I talked about, giving AI to our partners to help them find games, play slots with live, like the ecosystem. I used to talk about the ecosystem with the lobby, and we learned a lot, but now it's the rest of the ecosystem. And so we'll have the same good games and keep our focus on that. And that'll always be the sort of the lifeblood of evolution. I'm ready for a platform shift. If everybody starts wearing VR, AR, we've survived a platform shift before to the phone. We've survived a shift to HTML5 and things like that. So that would be fine. You know, we've certainly got plenty of developers that can. We'll lose a year of the roadmap, and we'll just bring all of our games over to AR, and that's fine. Yeah. I think that'd be cool. And that'll happen in slow motion. You'll see the adoption rates.
Yeah.
And at some point we'll say, like, we need to start bringing over our biggest games. And so I'm ready for a platform shift. That's not going to disrupt evolution. But we're paranoid,
yeah.
You know, every day we're looking for what are the things that we'd do if we were somebody else, and we just do them ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. And if we look at, if we move over to M&A, you recently acquired LiveSpins, one of the marketing director is a co-founder of Next, by the way, and obviously Robin and the guys of Happy Hour is part of our cap table as well in Next. So it was great news to see that you acquired that company. So they obviously are entering the market from a different perspective. They are seeing the social aspect as kind of the future of online casino, which traditionally has been a very lonely experience. It's you and the monitor, but LiveSpins are here to infuse that more exciting shared experience, let's say. Can you talk more about why did you decide to acquire LiveSpins? Mm-hmm. Where do you see opportunity with integrating their products into evolution? And just in general, talk more about social.
Yeah, I think it's a super current product. So for those listening who don't know what LiveSpins is, it's streamers playing slots, and you can play along with them. It is the most natural thing. So we know how big streaming is on Twitch and on Kick and YouTube. And probably everybody thinks at certain times when they're winning, boy, it'd sure be fun to play along with them. That would be so cool. And we're facilitating that. We'd been kicking this idea around ourselves. If we hadn't been so impressed with LiveSpins, we were going to build our own LiveSpins. We're already doing a lot of video stuff. We have slots. I've been talking forever about combining live and slots, and this was the next path for us. Then we met him, and when you're in that first meeting, I'm kind of thinking, well, do they have anything special here, or can we build this ourselves? and open-minded. Then you talk to them, it's very sophisticated what they're doing, and they have streamers that can stream from their homes, and they have a whole network built out, and they've thought deeply about what games they should play and how often they should switch games and how do they build their community and what are the right types of streamers and all that sort of stuff. So it's just the most natural thing that I could imagine. And I believe, just from a pure product perspective, that there's a lot of people out there that want to play slots with friends. And they don't need to push the spin button. They're happy to ride along with somebody else, and they play the same slots that they're used to seeing. LiveSpins had a journey in front of it where they had to sign up a bunch of providers so that they could play their games. And they need the famous stuff because that's what the players want to see. So they had the streamers, then they had to get that. So Evolution can immediately provide 4 slot brands plus Live. So all of a sudden, all of their streamers have so much content to play with Evolution. Of course, we'll get them onto one-stop shop, and we can get them out and we can distribute it. From my perspective, it's not that different from launching a game. It's a tile in a lobby. And so if you look at Asia and you look at different markets, it's becoming increasingly popular to buy from influencers. You know, they're talking about some lipstick or something and they just say, click below to buy it. And it's really, really popular. It seems very natural to me that table games and game shows are not the only thing that people want to play in a live format. So we're foot on the gas. The team is very smart at Live Spins, and we basically saved ourselves a bunch of time, and I think they did it better than we would have done it ourselves. And I'm super excited to continue to combine live and slots with those guys.
Right. And it seems to me that this deal is very much Evolution showing its muscles when it comes to the distribution in the way the deal is structured. It's a 5 million euro upfront cost and an unnamed earnout, but I'm guessing, you don't need to go into details, but I'm guessing that earnout is pretty significant in comparison to the upfront cash that you're paying for this acquisition. And the idea, of course, is that Evolution is able to sort that distribution from one day to the other, essentially, and open up this product to the entire market. So the question then, as we go forward into the future on the M&A side, is doesn't this also open up for further M&A for Evolution to kind of create these really synergetic deals where you don't have to front up that much cash and bring on board potentially future game studios and so on, bring the distribution up to a whole different level, and kind of everyone wins? It seems to be the strategy. This seems to be the big play here with the one-stop shop.
Yeah, I don't, maybe. I don't, my contribution to the M&A process, you mentioned the deal terms, I think you know more than I do. My contribution to the M&A process is lending an eye to it and trying to suss out if it is the next big thing or if it's something special, or if it would really benefit from distribution. So for sure, you know, everybody that we look at, you know, they're not going to have more distribution than they will at Evolution, right? They're only going to get bigger, and so it does. It is a cool thing. If I had my own company and I was making games, what I want as a game maker, and this is why, like, Evolution is the only place I can be, is because you want your work to be seen. You want to have it breathe. You want everyone to see it, and as many players to touch it as possible. And that's like the metric of success for game makers. And so if you're a game maker and, you know, you're struggling to get reach or something like that, and you're spending a lot of energy with compliance and all that sort of stuff, and you just like making games, Evolution can be a really good home for you. And so we've had some quite iconic game makers join Evolution for that reason. And so, yeah, the benefits are really good to join Evolution. As far as it being part of a grand architecture for more M&A or whatever, again, my contribution will be if I look at someone, I'm like, oh, these guys are making really neat games or something like that, then then I'll tell the deal makers at Evolution, and then I kind of disappear and they talk amongst each other.
Right. No, I think it's just an interesting observation, the fact that Live Spins was sold at such a low upfront cash deal. And I would imagine that if this company was bought by someone else, those deal terms would be completely different. And that is obviously a strength that, you know, how it Evolution, again, another competitive advantage, the fact that you have such a gravitational pull with Evolution, that you're able to create these kind of unique synergistic deals at a quite low cost at the end of the day. So I just thought that was an interesting observation.
You get to keep being yourself with all the benefits of size and scale. So I remember when the No Limit City acquisition happened, and there was these murmurs that Evolution was somehow going to make No Limit City start making G-rated games, and it was going to have to be all puppies and kittens. And that would be the worst possible idea. You know, nobody's reviewing their roadmaps to tell them what to do. You know, you do No Limit City, and make the games that your fans love. And we can help you with mass distribution and tools on top of that and all that sort of stuff.
Right. And I want to move over as well to innovation within the industry. I think innovation in games is a quite funny and unpredictable thing to talk about, because if we look at the last couple of years where innovation has come from in the type of games that have become popular, on the one hand, you have, you know, the likes of Crazy Time, where you just throw an enormous amount of money into building an incredibly complex studio and all that comes with it in order to run this spectacular, huge, larger than life type of game. That changed the way people play. On the other hand, you have a company like Spribe launching Aviator, which is the most simplest of simple of games. An airplane that is flying until it crashes. And it's just the simplest of innovations that again changed the industry, and it opened up a new category of crash games. And everyone thought that copying Aviator was going to be the easiest thing in the world. There are a lot of copies of Aviator, but for some reason, players are still drawn to the original Aviator game. So when you think about innovation in the industry, Todd, is there any trends that you are paying attention to? And how do you reconcile this kind of, on the one hand, you can kind of create more and more spectacular games, like now with Lightning Storm. It seems to be Crazy Time on drugs, let's say. But then on the other hand, there is that space for innovation in this simplest of simplest ideas as well. How do you think about innovation going forward? Mm-hmm. What trends are
Aviator attention? Is interesting too, because there's probably 70 or 100 versions of it now, and Aviator gets almost all the business.
Right.
And I'm sure that in that world, probably there's plenty of offers to discount version number 63, copy 63 of Aviator. But players don't want to change, right? That's a little bit what we were talking about earlier. They played Aviator, they like Aviator. Yours does the same thing. What's the value? So the time to try to be Aviator was when they were smaller and jump out in front of them and nail the distribution.
Yeah.
We missed that one. It's a cool point you make, because these simple, fast games, these crypto games, as I call them, that has been a genre of games that's sort of popped out there. I think about innovation from a number of different directions. One is you just start by looking outside the industry and starting with like your own user behavior. Like I used to say, oh yeah, we compete against Netflix and YouTube for screen time, and I believe that. But now I'd say it's more like we're sharing the eyeballs with Netflix. So Netflix is on while we're playing. And everything about our games, a lot of our new games, reflects that. It reflects the shorter attention spans. It reflects the fact that they might have one eye on the television and they might only want to play every other round. And so how would you design a game where they play with you for an hour and a half, but you only catch 45 minutes worth of play because they're skipping every other hand or so. So how do you appeal to like a sort of faster player? So if TikTok was a casino, what would it look like? And we think a lot about that sort of stuff and we have ideas. When I look at the streaming world, I think, wouldn't it be cool if, that's a great way, by the way, to innovate. Complete that sentence. Wouldn't it be cool if, or I hate it when, and so wouldn't it be cool if you could play along with a streamer? Yeah, that would be cool. And so we do it. And so I think of Live Spins as incredibly innovative. Like I said, we were gonna build it ourselves. I'm talking a little bit cryptic when I talk about how you look outside the industry and see kind of what's happening and pull it in. You say if technology were not a limiting factor, what would we do? Well, that's where DigiWheel came from. What if you could basically put a video in the middle of the wheel, and we can build a whole new genre of game shows now. And so like Lightning Storm is built on that. We couldn't do it without that piece of hardware. So, so it's a lot of like thinking about how we're limited now. I mean, it's hard to think like that we're limited, but we are. We are limited in a number of different ways. And so we'll innovate around that. And, you know, you'll see that in coming products, you know, but like live spins we're talking about, but there's other things around the corner as well.
Yeah. I spoke to David of Sprite, by the way, the founder of Sprite Innovator, and he told me about how much this one single game turns over every second, essentially, and then in contrast every year, and it's just mind-blowing numbers. Like, you know, if I were to ask you, because like, I don't think it would be difficult to predict the success of Aviator playing it for the first time, let's say, or maybe not, I'm not sure, but what do you think is the key to the success of such a simple game? Why did it become so popular, this very, very basic?
Yeah, everybody's great at predicting the past. Oh, I knew it was going to be a success. Right. Yeah, sure. It's a bunch of things. So it creates this wonderful negative-positive tension at the exact same time.
Right.
So, and it happens at lightning speed, right? Yeah. So it's incrementing at milliseconds. So the plane takes off, and it's more money, more money, more money, more money. And you've got that wonderful excitement of, I am literally getting richer by the millisecond.
Right.
That is fun, to get richer by the millisecond. And you know, at any millisecond, it could all end. And so you have that negative tension and that like short-term agony. And usually the game rounds are short enough. You can't put people in a state of agony for too long, because that's just not a very enjoyable experience. But that wonderful tension between the two is so beautifully balanced, and it's fast. And it came of age at a time when TikTok is shortening all of our attention spans. And so the game rounds are probably, an average game round is like 5 seconds or something like this. Maybe it's 6 or 7 seconds. The concept that you can sort of guarantee yourself a win if you're just not that greedy, if you hit the cash out button quite quickly, you know, a little bit though, like you can go to a roulette table and sort of guarantee yourself a win almost by covering 35 numbers, right? And then you'll get paid 35-1 and you get to keep one unit. So you make one unit. But let's just hope it doesn't land on 36 or zero. And so it's so good in that regard. And then the mechanism that they used that became the dominant mechanism, it could have been disarming a bomb, or it could have been anything else. And so having something that shows the visual growth of your money as going higher is so wonderfully natural. And I looked at it and I said, I was late, but I looked at it and said, this is clearly like a thing. I didn't say it's going to be the next big thing. It was already a pretty big thing when I when I started paying attention. And I said, let's do Cash or Crash. Let's do the live version of it. Well, you have all kinds of issues there. No need to go into all the fine details of it. But the game, it did not pop. And so, and a lot of it was because of the game speed and stuff like that. Tomorrow, we're quietly launching in a hidden away part of the world, a game called Stock Market Live. And it's very much inspired by Aviator and by the Crash games. And so it's our own twist on it. It's a live game. We've corrected the problems with Cash or Crash. It's blazing fast. It has tension. It brings a live game host. And so we're trying to capture the essence of what makes Aviator great and then deliver it in a new package. So yeah, it's a long answer, I know, but I've thought a lot about this subject, and we could even keep going, but sorry.
Yeah, it's interesting. And doesn't this type of game lend itself very much to social? Because that's one of the aspects of Aviator too, is the chat in Aviator is like exploding with comments consistently. And, you know, it's that aspect of like having kind of the balls to stay on for those like high X's and multiples and so on. So perhaps with live spins as well, and the social component, it can bring it to a whole new level. And the fact that you have the game show host there to react to the kind of big X's.
Yeah, and I didn't even mention the concept of the subtle competition that exists.
Right.
And that's another massive part of it. You can do it as a standalone game, and there would be benefits to that. It would be faster. You don't have to have a countdown. You could just have the plane take off when you're ready, stuff like that. So there's definitely some advantages to it from a player perspective. But having that I did better than you, right, having that, seeing where the other players got out early and how many people blew up, that is another very important dynamic. Again, our stock market game considers that as well. Right. But you're ready for game making, Pierre. What can I say? You offered me a gig earlier. I want you to know that if you decide that you want to get into game making, there's always a spot for you at EVO.
Maybe we can create that reality TV show where we swap jobs where we do something. Yeah, I don't think you'd want that, to be honest.
I don't think you'd want it.
All right, let's stay in our seats. We stay in our lanes.
I like my job.
Fair enough. So another aspect I want to talk about is something Evolution does a little bit different than your competitors on the B2B marketing side. You know, and I am very much a marketer by trade as well. I love anything to do with brand and marketing, and it's fascinates me. And on the B2B kind of marketing aspects of the industry, recently in the last couple of years, some of the B2B suppliers have really hit the accelerator button when it comes to their B2B marketing efforts. We saw Play and Go, for example, taking one of the headline sponsorships for the Haas Formula One team, spending allegedly tens of millions of euro over the course of X amount of years. Pragmatic Play taking a massive stand at ICE. They have now the biggest stand at the biggest show over there, and kind of accelerating their efforts to be seen as, you know, the kind of larger than life type of brand. And they want to, both of those brands want to create that kind of like brand perception of being a force to be reckoned with, let's say. Evolution, on the other hand, it's kind of ticking along with the marketing efforts. You know, the standard ice looks fantastic, you know, and it's always looked great. You know, it's not bigger, it's not smaller. It's kind of, you kind of done what you have done during the last couple of years, and you have visibility at some other shows as well, and you know, ours included. And we always love to host the EVO, and the things we do together is always great. But you aren't really looking at these, as far as I can tell, you haven't really done any kind of like major branding exercises to take it to the next level, even though the company has grown significantly over the course of the last couple of years. Can you talk more about kind of where you want to position the brand? How do you view B2B marketing, and how do you kind of remain in the forefront in people's eyes when your competitors are accelerating so aggressively?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we're a B2B company, and so the marketing efforts need to do enough to make sure that all the casinos of the world know about you, and that they're aware of your product, and that you have a means to show them that product, and then they'll do the marketing from there. And of course, we could do more, right? I mean, we could probably do a lot of marketing. But it's not, I guess philosophically, it's just not really Evolution. it's not in our DNA really. Like, we don't think, I mean, I'm proud at ICE because, you know, that's like our time of the year where we go and we show everything that we've been working on and all that. And our stand is pretty big. You know, but that's more a function of the fact that we need to be able to hold 100 meetings at one time or something, or that we have a lot of material to show. But flexing or something like that is just not how we think. We're having models and giveaways and all that sort of stuff, or having a grand unveilings, and it's just not us. Like, we're happy to just let Lightning Storm speak for itself, or to let you know, some new game that we're doing. We're experimenting now with Coin Pusher and Claw products, and I think that could be an interesting space for live casino. And we can put it out there, just kind of show people and take their temperature, and that's enough. So we don't struggle with our partners and the industry to know about us. We want to position the brand respectfully, honest. Of course, players will see some stuff that we put out there, even though we're B2B. Mainly, they see our games. I talk a lot about honesty and clarity and ease of understanding and high-quality craftsmanship, and we're happy to delay a launch to make sure it's perfect. But most of our marketing is probably done through the games themselves, and they speak very loudly.
Right.
Yeah.
So as an incumbent, you have that luxury, let's say, and whereas your competitors are trying to establish themselves and kind of create a name for themselves to perhaps pursue their distribution better and so on. But, you know, there are incumbents in other industries that enjoy the same level of distribution. You mentioned Coca-Cola earlier, for example. The product speaks for itself. It's in everyone's hands. It's on everyone's, in every store's shelf. Still, they are investing an enormous amount of money in marketing. Why do you think that is? And does that apply to Evolution as well?
Yeah, I mean, they're B2C, so they need people to pull it off the shelf, and so I think they're probably the right strategy for them. You know,
the only thing I'm trying to do here, Todd, is like basically making a pitch here to work more together. If I don't know if that's super true or anything.
It might sound simple, but we're like, I've been in companies where people love to talk about the latest industry gossip or what's going on or what move did this company make or what move did that company make. And I think people are always surprised. Like, they'll ask me about, oh, did you hear about this? Say, no, I didn't hear. Or, did you see this new launch of this new game? And no, didn't see it. You know, we're looking at the players and we're looking at our partners. And to the extent that others are distracted looking at us or you know, I don't doubt that what they're doing is right for them. I'm sure they're very, very smart people, and you know, sponsoring an F1 team to create visibility around it. And I'm sure they can host all kinds of wonderful parties with their partners, and I'm sure really smart people thought about that. It might be the exact right strategy for them. And I think for Evo, for today, I think we've got the right strategy. You know, we're open to new ideas every day.
Fair enough. Also, I want to talk about Evolution, how you built the company and how you maintain the company itself. I mean, you have one of the highest EBITDA margins of any public traded company in the entire world today. It's hovering at around 70%, 69 point something during the course of 2023. You are even increasing the guidance in 2024 to between 68 and 71%, I believe, or 69 to 71%. This is remarkable, right, for a technology company that is the paradox here is that you speak about how expensive it is to start a live casino operator. However, you are the one who is enjoying these incredible margins at the same time. And so this can only come from being just excellent at building and maintaining an organization. So I guess the question is, how do you build and maintain a great company? That's an open question.
Yeah, it's more of a Martin question than than a me question.
But you've observed this. Observed these efforts for a number of years now. What is it that makes Evolution great as an organization?
Yeah.
How can you keep this status?
You're talking about the margins, and you're talking about also how to keep the company great and all that sort of stuff. And the business itself, as I talked about, is quite tricky. It is having a religious focus on the players and keeping that in the DNA. My contribution to the process is a lot to do with products. And so it is getting everyone to keep their heads down and to stay focused on the product and the games. And you know, I'm the chief cheerleader within products, so I gotta keep everybody jazzed up and reward observations about something where, like, the way a button on a game flashes and someone will catch it. I'm like, great catch. And I mean that. But you want to, like, reward that. Or I always tell everybody internally, if you have ideas, bring them to me. It doesn't matter. Reach out to me in any channel, Slack, grab me at the coffee machine, send me an email, whatever. And people do. Game presenters do. People from all over the company do. And I always give them an audience. And you never know when a good idea is going to come. But I think that probably builds a culture where you feel like ideas flow freely. And usually the answer is no, but it's great idea. Here's the thinking behind it. Here, it's going to be no, but here's why. And if we could adjust for these factors, which I think are very, very difficult to do, then you'd have a winner. But you have a seedling of a good idea, and it's this. And I feed that back to them, and they get a little smarter. So I think that just becomes part of the culture. And so that's in product, but that's happening kind of all over the company. And just that relentless focus on the player. That's the ticket home. Avoiding distraction, keep our heads down, stay paranoid, try to disrupt yourself every day. You know, we don't ask questions about cannibalization. Oh, if we did Lightning Storm, do you think it's going to cannibalize Crazy Time? Don't know. Don't care. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. I'm not smart enough to figure it out. Oh, where do you think the players will come from that are going to play Lightning Storm? I don't know.
Right.
Probably everywhere. Maybe some markets will be better. I'm not sure. But I just know it's a great game that players are going to want to play. And that's enough.
So that's an interesting point that you make. You know, every time you launch a live game, is the question is exactly that, right? Like, from the outside world, at least, isn't this just cannibalizing from other games? Like, is that a question that you ever think about? Like, how do you attract new players?
I'll tell you something interesting. Last year, we launched Funky Time, a mega game show. We got disco music in there, like super famous disco songs. It's built on the Digiwheel. It's a spectacle. It was the most expensive game we'd ever made. Crazy Time grew its players by 50% last year. It finally hit its stride, Crazy Time, in 2023. Right. It finally hit its stride. I'm saying finally, playfully, because it had been the number one game for a long time. But it increased by players 50% last year, in a year when we launched Funky Time. Maybe it would have been more had we not launched Funky Time. I don't know. Right. But Monopoly Live also grew last year. And so from what I can tell, it's more like if you have a McDonald's next to a Burger King and a Taco Bell, and now another one shows up, they all just make more money. If you build a Starbucks next to a Starbucks, people just drink more coffee, is what it seems. And so that's what it is. But so no, it doesn't seem that it's a cannibalization effect. It just, we're making more game show players. We're making more live players.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we go back to the question on the kind of disruptions of the organization and so on, a couple of years ago, it's like pretty much 2 years ago now, short seller reports came out that made some pretty heavy accusations towards Evolution that really disrupted the share price before it bounced back now 2 years later. Because of that short seller report, an investigation was opened against Evolution in the state of New Jersey. This investigation now concluded and found no wrongdoing whatsoever. I'm curious to know a little bit, like, how much of a needle in the eye this kind of case became for you guys, and if you have any kind of thing to, any words to mention on that whole saga.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have it over, and that's good. I mean, my experience with it, I'll just speak to my experience. Right. You know, as you said, the stock went down a lot, and we have people that work in products and marketing and my team, people that I care about, and they have like their life savings in it. It's like big money. It's like everything. And other people, there's investors that have money in it, but the investors are on the side. I'm talking about like people that work at Evolution, and they just watched it get wiped out. And you know, the stock slowly, slowly grinded its way back and all that. But like, people don't sleep, and like it wrecked people, and all over a report that was fake news. And so yeah, it's disruptive. It's painful, and it's really nice to have it behind us.
Right. And you're kind of turning the page now, of course. And I mean, this is potentially also part of being the incumbent in this space where you are attacked perhaps from left, right, and center, and so on. It's difficult to predict, difficult to kind of do anything against that, right? It just has to play out the way it plays out eventually. But then, you know, at the end of the day, you get rectified.
Yeah, you know, it's, I mean, there's attacks kind of, they come from different angles. I mean, there's DDoS attacks to try to, you know, shut down our site. And, you know, that's normal stuff in tech probably. And, you know, you've got all these different things, and no need to go into all of them. But as they come, you know, maybe at one point you had to deal with it for the first time, and then you deal with it for the second time, and then the third time. And there's no playbook on this stuff. And as I said, you know, we're a software company, a casino operator, and a hardware company, and that's really where we live. And so these disruptions come along, and you get a little bit better at handling them when they come. But just, yeah, you're right. It's the cost of doing business, I guess, when you're doing well.
Right. So kind of to start wrapping things up now, Todd, today, if we now look at the future of Evolution, you know, we have kind of established during this recording today that it's the company is in a very good position right now for growth. But if you were to kind of predict where Evolution will be in, say, 3 years' time, what is the kind of investment, I guess, what is the investment case for Evolution? Where do you see the company in 3 years' time compared to today? You know, when we did our podcast 4 years ago, since then, we've just seen continued growth, essentially. Within the existing verticals that you had already at that time, do you see any? Do you see potential curveballs within the organization, or is it just continue with the kind of juggernauts that you are today and continue growth in the segment that you have, or how do you see the company in 3 years' time?
Again, from the product side, more everything. We're a global company now, so. We've been a global company for a while, but there's no more roadmaps that are like leaning towards this part of the world or that part of the world. You need really something for everybody, and you have to constantly strengthen the core, and you have to do fresh stuff like live spins, and you have to have a suite of things around your slots to support that infrastructure. And so, yeah, it's going to be absolutely more everything. The name of the game is delighting players, though, and so that's always the North Star. Distribution is important, giving operators things that they need, tools, all that stuff, all very important. And we got to be competitive on all fronts. But yeah, it's in the next few years. I mean, think of this. So I don't you know Evolution's numbers better than me, but you said our EBITDA margins were like 70%. So that means 30% of the money. 30% is going towards expenses. Well, I don't know what the 30% is, but you know, it's hundreds of millions of euros, right? And so we're going to be spending that every year. And you know, a lot of that's going to go to pay all of our staff and everything else, but a lot of it's going to go to strengthening the product. So hundreds of millions, even to the extent that it's on operational staff, you know, we're going to be dealing all those cards, all those roulette spins, all those smiles, all those big wins. All that, everything, strengthens the brand. And so, and people will come in and they'll play Lightning Storm, and that game is going to have a lot of big wins. And it's designed for YouTube, and it's designed for streaming. And people are going to see that, and they're going to tell their friends, I played this cool game yesterday. And we'll have 3 years of benefit of that in 3 years from now. And we'll have had 6 years of benefit from crazy time doing the same thing, and so on and so forth. And you just have this sort of compounding effect. And 3 years from now, we'll have 3 years of people playing slots along with live on desktop. And we'll have had 3 years of, or 2.5 years of wonderful tools where we just give money to players through spin gifts. And so all of these compounding effects will hopefully continue to just make players smile. And that's all we can do. The rest of the stuff, you know, like, that's what happens with interest rates, all that stuff, I don't know. But if we make the players smile, and we'll be in a better spot 3 years from now than we are today.
And as a final point today, I read a investment case by a retail investor. I can't remember exactly the name of this person, but he's heavy into evolution, and it's kind of his strongest position. And he talked about the strengths and the weaknesses of the company. And he ended with kind of like, what is the biggest risk for evolution moving forward? And his assessment was that the biggest risk to evolution is Todd Haushalter leaving the company. So my question to you, Todd, is will you remain in evolution in the next 3 years? Can you reassure the investors out there that yeah. doesn't have to be?
Well, he's got his thanks for the compliment, first of all, but he's got his risks wrong. You know, first of all, I'm not going anywhere. Let's start with that. It's very easy to like break your arm patting yourself on the back. And, you know, I'm here on the pod today and talking, but there's like a lot of people that make the magic happen. And it's very easy for you to sort of get too high on yourself. And you got to remind yourself that if I leave, people are still going to log in tomorrow, and they're going to play Crazy Time, and they're going to still log in, and they're going to play all those games and all those things. Most everything we've talked about today continues to truck on. Nobody's logging in to play because I'm here. Of course, I play an important role, for sure. So do lots of people at Evolution. But I think it's overstating it to say that it's some giant risk or something like that. But I appreciate the compliment.
It's a good screenshot to take when you go into your next salary negotiation with Martin, at least. You know, just FYI, look at this. Brilliant, Todd. Well, thank you so much for today. It's been a long time coming to have you back here. It is always an absolute pleasure to have you here, my friend. Yeah. We've become good friends throughout the years because of this, and may it long continue. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Really, really great. Thanks a lot.